Hello and welcome to One-on-One with LAPA. This is the Legislative Analysis and Public Policy Association's podcast series where experts discuss key issues and emerging topics in the areas of public health and safety, substance use disorders, and the criminal justice system. LAPA is funded by a grant from the Office of National Drug Control Policy, Executive Office of the President. Neither the Office of National Drug Control Policy nor any other federal instrumentality operate, control, or are responsible for, or necessarily endorse this podcast. I am John Woodruff, a senior legislative attorney with LAPA, your host for today's podcast. The podcast is covering ODMAP, which is the Overdose Detection and Mapping Application Program. My guest today is Elise Alter. Elise is senior program manager for ODMAP and Case Explorer with the Washington Baltimore HIDA. Hello, Elise. Thank you for joining me today.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me.
ODMAP just runs right off the tongue. As an icebreaker, if I were to ask you for, the one sentence description of ODMAP, how would you describe it?
That's a good question. ODMAP provides near real-time suspected overdose surveillance data across jurisdictions to support public health and public safety efforts.
Cool. So tell me a little bit about how ODMAP came to happen. Whose brainchild was it? How did it form? Sort of how long did that process go?
Sure. So ODMAP, I certainly can't take credit for it. I came in after ODMAP was already a thing. Tom Carr, our executive director of the Washington Baltimore HIDA, is really the brainchild behind the actual concept of ODMAP. Basically, in fall of 2016, he was at a meeting in Baltimore with various leaders ranging from drug court judges to public health and public safety. And there was a realization at that time of several factors. One is that traditionally as a nation, as a state, as a county, we're pretty good at tracking fatal overdoses, although there can be a lag in the reporting of those. But no one was really collecting non-fatal overdose data. And if they were, it wasn't in real time. And non-fatal overdoses represent a really logical intervention point. Second was that public safety especially would look back at calls for service and say, wow, we responded to an abnormal number of overdose calls, last Wednesday. And that's where that conversation started and ended. So Tom was like, well, what if we could respond to a spike in overdoses as it's occurring? So he basically came back to our network operations center, said, hey, go develop this, do it in 30 days. And they did. And by January 2017, ODMAP was released in a pilot in areas of West Virginia and Maryland. And then due to early success, positive feedback, ODMAP became available nationally in April 2017 and has really grown tremendously since then. And now here we are in May 2020, and its expansion is over 3,000 agencies at this time.
So it's participating agency sort of is the term I use, and is that the term you use for sort of each individual agency that's reporting data in, correct? Is that
correct?
Okay. So you brought something up, and if you don't have the statistic, that's okay. But do you know roughly what percentage of overdoses are fatal versus non-fatal?
I do not know that one off the top of my head.
But the non-fatal overdose is a decent percentage of.
Yes, absolutely.
Was ODMAP always called ODMAP? Is that its name from day one, or did it have something else that is now morphed into ODMAP?
So from talking to members on our development team and with Tom and others that were part of making ODMAP what it is today, ODMAP, I know, was not the sole name they had come up with. But there were a couple others out there, but ODMAP was the one that kind of stuck. And I wish I could tell you what the other ones were, because I'm actually interested myself, but I don't know. So I guess it remains a mystery, at least to you and I for now.
Gotcha. So when did you start working on ODMAP?
Yeah, so I came in July of 2018. At that time, there wasn't a dedicated ODMAP team. Jeff Beeson, our deputy director, he was semi-new to HIDA at that time. And so he came in right as ODMAP was in development. And he really took ODMAP under his wing and made huge strides with ODMAP as far as awareness, adoption, both within our backyard and nationally. And due to that growth there was a realization of, hey, maybe we need some dedicated people to help support ODMAP. So that's when I came on board as the ODMAP program manager. And at that time, we also had a ODMAP coordinator named Deb Flores, who has actually moved on to our finance department.
Gotcha. So did you join Washington Baltimore HIDA in July 2018, or were you?
I did.
Okay. And what did you do before that?
Prior to that, I had been a detective for about 6 years in the Richmond, Virginia area. So I had a variety of assignments ranging from patrol to recruitment, special victims unit.
That sounds very interesting. So presently, I mean, you're full-time on ODMAP, correct?
I am.
So sort of how many HIDA folks are sort of working on ODMAP presently, full-time,
so,
a considerable amount of their time?
Yeah, so one thing that I'm always excited to tell people is how lean our ODMAP team is, because I feel strongly that small teams get a lot done. There's a lot of advantages to having a small team, a really intimate team that works close together. And so on the ODMAP team itself, there's actually only one other dedicated person on kind of the program side. His name is Chris Yeager. He's an ODMAP analyst. He has a background coming from a police officer in Baltimore City and Bowie, and then transitioning from a police officer into an analyst and then making his way over to us at HIDA. We do have one vacant position right now for an ODMAP coordinator. And with all that being said, there's a ton of people from around the nation that maybe aren't on paper, you know, dedicated ODMAP people all day long, but they definitely play a really big part in that. That goes to our development team, Make ODMAP Possible. That goes over to our help desk to help answer our almost 30,000 users' questions and support them, but really also to our HIDA partners who have participated in the overdose response strategy, that have public health analysts and drug intelligence officers out there supporting ODMAP. Of course, our federal partners that may release solicitations or even just, you know, general support that help make ODMAP, you know, what it is.
Well, that's a lot being done with just a few folks. So that's pretty darn impressive. So you mentioned with that you have, you earlier said you had 3,000 participating agencies and 30,000 users. So jumping to sort of like how someone joins before we get into sort of how it works, but how does an agency sort of become a participating agency? Do they, you know, is it as simple as emailing you and saying, well, we'd like to be interested, or are there other steps they need to take?
Yeah, so I think it's even more simple than an email. They can actually just go over to our website, to odmap.org. They click a button on there that says agencies, and then there's a button just below that that says request agency access. And so they can go there, they fill out their information. They just have to be one of the agencies that is available to have access to ODMAP. So it's not available to the public, right? So it has to be a government entity that could be federal, state, local, tribal, that serves the interests of public safety and or public health as part of its official mandate, as well as private first responders. So that fills in the gap for maybe counties that have a private EMS company complete the bulk of its EMS service, or EDs and hospitals for the purpose of entering and tracking overdose victims that may present themselves at the ED, but are not first responder involved. So they just fill out that form. It comes over to us. We verify that everything is valid and correct. Then they get an email saying, yep, you're approved. They sign an electronic participation agreement, and they're good to go.
And so do you have one of these participation agreements with each individual agency?
So it can vary. So generally, yes. And I say it could vary because maybe, for example, when you look at a statewide implementation of ODMAP and you look at a statewide repository of data, such as EMS data, we may only have one agreement, for example, with Florida Department of Health, who's transmitting EMS data on behalf of the entire state. However, those agencies that are involved, whose data is being transmitted by Florida Department of Health, could still have a participation agreement with us. The participation agreement really has governance for data sharing. So the agreement, in my non-legal summary, is basically saying that the data that you enter is your data. Us at ODMAP, we're the data stewards. Yes, you have access to national data, but that does not give you the right to disseminate the data, manipulate the data, any of that stuff.
Gotcha. It's the data is owned by whoever submitted it.
Correct.
So then getting actually into the mechanics of it, my working knowledge of it is there's two sides, and correct me if I'm fouling up the terminology, but you have the area where information is about overdose events is loaded into, which is called level one. And mm-hmm. then you have the area where the information that has been loaded in can be collected, visualized on a map, and that's level two. Who determines who has level one and level two access? Is that a determination by Washington, Baltimore, HIDTA, or the folks who are actually the participating agency?
We have guidelines that we put out there. I'd say they're a little more than a guideline because it's our policies and procedures, but basically it's up to the agency. So, and that's the way that ODMAP is by design, so much of it to be tailored to what makes the most sense for the agency. And by any means, myself at the ODMAP program office, I have no idea, you know, who's in your department and who should have access to what. That decision is best made from the boots on the ground. And so generally what we see is level one is the real data entry. It's the administrative hub of the platform itself. And so people who have access to level one could be first responders that are actually responding to overdoses. It could be an agency head that is, you know, responsible for oversight of overdose data collection into ODMAP. Level two is going to be more for analysts and decision makers, people that have a need to know for national level data.
Gotcha. Because once at the level two area, you're viewing not only, let's say I'm physically located in Virginia. So if I work for a participating agency and have level two access, I would see more than just Virginia's information, correct?
Correct. Yep. You would see that any data that had been entered into ODMAP throughout the nation.
So at the level one level, what data is collected? I know there's a few things that are required for all overdose events, and there are also things that can be collected, but I guess that's a decision made by the individual agency or their ability to track it, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're 100% tracking there. So the only required information, and when I say required, that means the information that's needed to make a successful submission, is the first one is the location. You can utilize an address, coordinates, or if you happen to be on scene, you can use your device's location. Because ODMAP is web-based, so you can access it on a cell phone, an MDT in your patrol car, a tablet in your medic, or a computer back at a station. And so you enter in a location. Important to mention too that once you enter it in a location, if you use address, for example, the address will be discarded from our system and it will be translated to an approximated location via latitude and longitude. The only other required information is the fatality status and how much naloxone was administered. Those are actually combined into a button. So the person who's entering in the information, you know, puts in the location, they click a button. So maybe, for example, they enter non-fatal multiple doses of naloxone administered. It takes them to a screen. They enter in the date and time, and they're good to go. That's all that's required. But like you mentioned, there are some optional fields that you can enter in. And so those are things like case number, age, gender, primary suspected drug, additional suspected drug, someone was taken to the hospital, if they were part of a multiple overdose victim incident, if a motor vehicle was involved, and then who administered the naloxone. And it's really important to note that this information can be updated. So since ODMAP is in near real time, we don't have toxicology yet, don't have crime lab back. This is based off of a first responder or whoever is responding, training and experience, combined with maybe how they present themselves, if they respond to naloxone, paraphernalia on scene, and things like that. So once you receive some validated information back, can actually update that in the system.
I could see a concern would be for a level one users, they might have a database, they already have to enter some of the stuff in, and then they don't want to have to enter something in twice. So I know you have a way for information that's loaded into state level or county level databases to sort of all be, in the brute way of saying it, sort of automatically uploaded to level one without sort of a second data entry, correct?
Yeah, so there we do have an API, and that stands for Application Programming Interface. And I'm not a tech person, so to explain it in the non-technical terms, it's a software intermediary. So it basically allows ODMAP to talk to someone's record management system. And that could be, you know, a statewide record management system of EMS data. That could be a, or law enforcement data. It could be a local of either. It could be a local coroner database. Basically, any of those, the API is already written. And so in the background, ODMAP is constantly talking to that system without you or I or anyone knowing. And so, you know, as soon as a patient care record is completed, as soon as a police report is completed, they can automatically come over to ODMAP. Really important to mention, because sometimes there's some confusion there, that by no means is the entire police report or the entire patient care record coming over to ODMAP. Basically, you kind of mine through the data fields, those that are required for ODMAP or any of the optionals that you want to, and you send those over. So currently we have over 30 agencies that have an active API with ODMAP.
Cool. And to for someone who hasn't seen it, on the level two side, what sort of is the view that someone sees? How would you describe what the level two analyst would be looking at?
Yeah, so it's built off of Esri software. So if someone's familiar with, you know, using ArcGIS, it's going to look very similar to that. So when you log into level two, going to default to data that's been entered nationally within the past 24 hours, you'll see a legend there on the left-hand side. Diamonds represent fatal overdoses, circles represent non-fatal overdoses, and the colors correspond to the naloxone administration. But most important, I think, is the ability to really drill down to what you're looking for. So if you want to look at overdoses that have been entered in your county because you're at the public health department and you have both EMS and police entering it, you want to use it as syndromic surveillance, you can select your state, select your county, you can pick a time frame. Basically, you can keep toggling these filters and the data will correlate with those. And then there's also some charts that will continue to correlate with whatever filters you have toggled. So it will kind of take all the data and make it really digestible for you. So if you're trying to look at, you know, overdoses in your county for this quarter, it will let you know which hour of the day you experience the most overdoses, which day of the week, and things like that that are really helpful for analysts, in addition to being able to overlay, you know, other data sets in ODMAP. So they could overlay publicly available ArcGIS data, or they could upload CSV data that's native to their agency.
CSV being sort of like database stuff.
Yeah, I mean, just an Excel file.
Gotcha. Yeah, so if they're collecting whatever other piece of information in a geographic manner, then you can overlay that.
Yeah, 100%.
I think it's true that there's at least one participating agency using ODMAP in all 50 states and DC. Is that accurate?
Almost. There's one that's not participating, but they're working really hard. And so Arizona is the only state that's not participating, but that doesn't go without dedication and hard work. Sometimes, you know, states, they all go about it in different ways, you know, and so sometimes there could be a stronger framework that maybe they want to put in place before agencies on board.
So I know last year there was it was COPE at the time, I guess it's called COSIP now, grant for statewide adoption of ODMAP, with that being termed statewide adoption, meaning that you are, as a state, you're capturing at least 80% of the overdose events that occur. Were there any states at that level before this grant was opened up? And I guess just a two-part question, were there any? And then I guess now you can talk a little bit about the I guess it's 8 locations that are working towards that, and maybe some of them have even gotten to that point with the grant.
Yeah, so there were some prior to the COPE, now the COSAP. And so the ones that were active before were Maryland, West Virginia, and Illinois. Those are all active via legislation. So to preface, for an example, what that could look like, for example, Maryland passed legislation. It went active in July 2018. So that is how, or really, I guess, what facilitates the statewide EMS API between the Maryland Institute of EMS Services and ODMAP. West Virginia is similar, but a little bit more comprehensive in who is mandated to report into ODMAP And then Illinois, recent, and then that one's really more centered around Chicago. And then you don't need legislation to make it active in your state. And again, it's really whatever works best for your state. So some examples of other ones were Oklahoma, New Jersey, Maine, Nevada, and Connecticut. And then, like you mentioned, in September 2019, those 8 states were selected, part of the ODMAP statewide expansion and response grant through COSAP, but also co-funded by CDC. And so 3 of those states were already ones that I listed. So New Jersey, Nevada, and Connecticut. So they were selected, and then 5 new states. And so the 5 new ones were Ohio, Florida, Minnesota, Rhode Island, and Georgia.
I guess they're sort of all within their first 6 to 9 months of working, those 5 newest ones working on this. Is that implementation moving along? Are you facing particular challenges associated with that?
It is moving along. We have monthly calls that we are coordinated by IIR, who is overseeing that grant. And it's going well. States are currently working on subawardees. They are giving out county level subawards to implement ODMAP as part of that grant. So it's still very much in the beginning phases of it, and some definite complications. I think the obvious is COVID-19. So that definitely puts kind of not a wrench. They're still working on both activities, but definitely complicates things and moves timelines, you know, slightly. And then as far as other challenges, I wouldn't call it a challenge, but I would call it an opportunity to learn from each other. Is the sharing of information between public health and public safety. And that's still very much new for some people and can be a little bit scary. And so I think navigating information sharing between public health and public safety is a great learning opportunity as part of this solicitation.
And that brings me to a point I was going to mention. The reason the two of us, you know, this isn't our first conversation and we know each other a bit is because one, LAPA within the last 6 months has developed the model law called the Model Overdose Reporting and Response Act. That is a way to propose a statewide adoption of ODMAP, of an OD mapping and response system using ODMAP. And that model law is designed to require development of that within a couple of years and require reporting in by law enforcement, people providing emergency services, hospital, EMS, fire department, and also medical examiners and coroners. And so that is for anyone listening who's, you know, wondering how could legislation look in my particular state. You have examples in Illinois and West Virginia and Maryland and others, but there's also our model law that's out there. And you were very helpful in that being developed.
Well, thanks. I should say that I think you're very helpful. You did a lot of the heavy lifting with really doing the research and dissecting the laws that are out there. So yeah, for anybody who's listening that is thinking of, you know, enacting or proposing legislation in their state, definitely encourage them to read over this just because it's really agnostic. It's written to really be implemented in diverse settings.
And that our model law can be found at the LAPA website, which is legislativeanalysis.org/model-laws/. We also, in doing this, and you touched on this, developed a guidance document for dealing with health information sharing or the protected health information piece. That document's pretty detailed and we would put people to sleep going into it in any depth now. But essentially, the point of this is the types of information that are collected in level one. The vast majority of it is not personally identifiable. And so all it really boils down to is sort of the location of the overdose. HIPAA, it allows more sharing of public health information than maybe it has a reputation for. And so there are a number of avenues by which information can be shared for public health purposes, for law enforcement purposes, if you have a law in your state, because the law of the state requires the sharing, and also for protection of public health. Point of ODMAP is what its job is, it satisfies those and means that the sharing of the information, and most of which is not personally identifiable and only one thing might be, which is approximate location, is allowable. LAP, in conjunction with Washington Baltimore High, to develop a guidance document that talks about that. That also is available on the LAPO website. And that's at legislativeanalysis.org/research/is where you would find that. I meant to ask this and it just popped into my head. One important aspect of ODMAP on the level two side is that you can generate spike alerts, correct?
Almost there. So you generate the spike alerts actually in the level one platform.
Okay. So I know, A, that Washington Baltimore HIDTA has developed some guidance on spike alerts, but also that can be tweaked a bit by participating agencies. But can you sort of describe the spike alert aspect of ODMAP?
Yeah. So the spike alert system is a really important feature of ODMAP. It's helping quick response teams figure out how to deploy their resources, when to deploy them. And so a spike alert in ODMAP is triggered when the submissions in ODMAP based off of state and county increase two standard deviations above the mean in the past 24 hours. And the mean is calculated based on the past 90 days of submissions for that county. And so what that means in a real life example, say that in your county in Virginia, 24 hours, what you would consider a spike alert threshold is 8. And you want to be notified the minute that the 9th overdose is entered, because that means there could be potentially something anomalous occurring, something is changing in the environment, and you want to be aware of it as a decision maker, as someone who's involved in harm reduction, whatever it may be. So basically, you'll get an email and it will say, you know, your state and county is in a spike. There have been 9 overdoses in the past 24 hours. You have set your threshold at 9. And basically, it will keep alerting you as overdoses increase if they do. And so it will keep applying that space and time, county past 24 hours, and keep alerting you ultimately until you dip below that threshold that you have determined, either based off of your own calculation or by using that algorithm that ODMAP suggests, and then we'll let you know once your spike alert has ended. And so there's different variables in the system that you can kind of play with and tailor. So the first that we just talked about is the threshold. The second is the distribution list. So it actually comes out in an email. So you can have anybody on that distribution list that you want. And so a lot of times we see something like a quick response team. So you may have someone from police and fire and EMS and district attorney's office and coroner and whoever it may be, all on there so that they're all on the same page. And they can also change, you know, the subject and the body of the spike alert as well. So that could, you know, be a reminder of formulate quick response team or whatever it may be. They can really tailor it to make sense to what's happening in their backyard.
Gotcha. And I know there are some jurisdictions that do use that extensively and sort of make their own who it's alerting and what levels, which people get alerted when, based on timing and also sort of, I guess, how much above the spike threshold you are.
Yeah. And I think that last point you said is really important, you know, when to notify. You don't want the public or even people internally to become really alert fatigued. You know, you want the alert to do that, just that, to alert, and not them to become so fatigued and accustomed to it that they are no longer, you know, alerted.
Final area to discuss before we wrap up, it sort of needs to be mentioned these days, is how is ODMAP being used in sort of this age of COVID-19? I mean, maybe it's being used in the same way, so it's just that information coming in, the rate of overdoses might be different because of COVID-19, or what sort of are there any sort of new applications of ODMAP happening sort of these last couple of months given the COVID-19 response?
There are, and it's been an interesting learning piece for us, as I'm sure the rest of the nation, as far as the having a pandemic, really two concurrent national public health emergencies. And so from talking to users as COVID-19 quickly emerged, much of our analysts using ODMAP, and one reason why ODMAP was built the way that it was, is so that it could be equitable. Not every agency has the resources to have an analyst. And so that's why we try to make it as user-friendly as possible so that it could really be used by anyone, because it's really important that if you're putting information in, that you're finding a way to get information out. And so we heard back from people, they would be really interested in trying to assess the possible implications of COVID-19 on substance use disorder populations. And so we released 3 YouTube videos so far as part of a series that takes users through how they can access publicly available COVID-19 data and overlay it with ODMAP data and how they can import Excel files of other data that may not be publicly available in the ArcGIS library. So we put those out there and got tremendous feedback. And as COVID-19 has continued to evolve, so has our analysis. So we've been conducting an ongoing analysis of the possible implications of COVID-19 on the overdose epidemic for about 2 months now. During the initial analysis, there was really no apparent statistical significance between confirmed COVID-19 cases and ODMAP submissions. However, as our analysis has continued and as, you know, things like testing increases for COVID-19, you really have a better understanding of what may or may not be happening. So we have been seeing more of a correlation between a statistically significant positive relationship between the two. And there's been several press releases from around the nation also reporting an apparent increase in overdoses. So qualitative data from interviews that we've had with ODMAP stakeholders, as well as press releases anecdotally, indicate that perhaps stay-at-home orders, alterations in delivery of harm reduction services, and economic factors may be attributed to the increase. So it's definitely something that we continue to monitor and analyze on a weekly basis to see what's occurring. And we will probably put something out more publicly on an ongoing basis in the near future. And when we do that, it will be something with what we're able to share.
Gotcha. And would that be something you'd post to your website?
Absolutely.
I think the participating agencies would, they're more attuned to what sort of the analysis that's happening at your level. But if it's, you know, available, if that information can be shared and it can be posted on the website, that's great. Outside of COVID-19, are there any other ODMAP developments on the horizon? I mean, this doesn't have to be something that, you know, will be done in a week or a month, but other things that are, you know, hopefully coming down the pipeline?
There's always something that we're working on, but an even longer list of things that we want to work on, we just haven't had time to get to. But we do have a release of ODMAP currently in development. We're really excited about this one because it's going to make ODMAP really one seamless application. So there will no longer be, you know, having to log into level one and having to log into level two. It's just going to be one centralized login point. Your credentials will get you access, you know, to the information in there, depending on what they are. We also have a user series, which, thank you. When we had our working group for the model law and for the privacy guidance, you and LAPA allowed us to steal some of those ODMAP all-stars to film them. And the first one with New Jersey State Police. Our next one will come out, which is a view from public health from our partners at Shelby County Health Department in Memphis, Tennessee. Then we'll have our folks and friends at Erie County. And then the last one will actually be myself and Jeff Beeson, our deputy director, talking about the history of ODMAP. And then last up, it's in the works, but a little further off, trying to incorporate some predictive analysis into ODMAP that works with our spike alerts.
Getting the actuaries involved in predicting or the sabermetrics, I guess, if you go the sports route to figure out. Well, that's all very, very interesting. And I thank you, Elise, very much for joining me on this podcast.
And I thank you for having me. It's always great to work with you and the folks at LAPA. I really appreciate the partnership.
That's all the time we have for today. Thank you to Elise Alter, Senior Program Manager for ODMAP and Case Explorer with the Washington Baltimore HIDA. Please join us next on One-on-One with LAPA, where we will discuss another interesting topic. In the meantime, if you would like to learn about ODMAP, log on to legislativeanalysis.org or contact LAPA at info@thelapa.org. And search for ODMAP. And of course, you can also get tons and tons and tons of information about ODMAP at odmap.org. Thank you very much for listening to this podcast.